to the winter meetings of baseball right from the job fair. We're doing a live podcast. It's absolutely crazy. Ben Gelman-Chomsky joined first off today by Michael Viso. Michael, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm pretty excited to be here. So.
And this is going to be on my website, benjgc.com, and that's a complicated spelling. It's benjgc.com. So we're going to get right into it. A whole bunch of baseball news going on. The biggest one of the day, no doubt about it, the Miami Marlins. I'm so used to calling them the Florida Marlins. The Miami Marlins, after Albert Pujols' 10-year offer, reportedly in excess of $200 million, is 10 years too long to be offering Pujols? Now, he is arguably the greatest right-handed hitter of all time, but this is a guy who's clearly beginning the downslope of his career. Is 10 years too long to give him?
I think that it might be, and it's tough to say that, but at 31 years old, you're locking him up until he's 41, and that's really taking a risk. But you know what? If I'm the Miami Marlins, I'm really trying to change the culture, trying to change my old ways. It might be a good idea, and you're thinking you're going to have him for 5-6 years. He's going to hit 37, 38 years old, and then you might be able to send him over to the AL, pick up some pieces then. And if you're as good as you hope to be, he might be that piece that helps you put together one or two championships and get back to the ways of old.
Certainly the Marlins already having made a splash with the signings of Jose Reyes and Heath Bell, close to $140 million committed to those two players alone. That's not something that we've traditionally seen out of the Marlins organization splurging like that. And they're also apparently in on Mark Burley even a little bit. It's absolutely nuts.
I heard they're after C.J. Wilson as well. So they're really putting all their chips on the table and saying, hey, look, this is what we are now. This is who we're going to be. And you should come down here. Miami sells itself city-wise. It's just changing the culture of the organization and people's perceptions of them.
And the fan perspective as well. You know, somebody mentioned to me earlier today, why would Albert Pujols leave arguably the best baseball city in America in St. Louis and go to Miami where people can't even come to the ballpark?
Well,
they just hate it.
I think that now that they have their new ballpark, I heard Heath Bell say that it was the most unbelievable ballpark he's ever been in. So if you're hearing that from a guy that's moving from San Diego,
and
which
Petco
is a beautiful park,
yeah,
park,
gorgeous
right?
park,
and now to Miami, that has something to be said. For the Cardinals, though, I really can't tell you enough how I just have such a distaste for the way that they handle this. They throw all this money at Matt Holliday to try to bring him there, to bring the championship that they wanted, and then all of a sudden you're not putting your priorities in place, and your priorities have to be Albert Pujols for what he's done for your organization.
Oh, he's the face of the franchise, no question about it. No player since Stan Musial, arguably, with potentially the exception of, say, Ozzie Smith or Bob Gibson,
right,
has truly identified the Cardinals as much as Albert Pujols does. Now, the Marlins and the Cardinals, not the only bidders on Pujols. The Chicago Cubs have made a qualifying offer today, and this comes after Theo Epstein had previously said, I'm not going to be going after the big boys, Fielder and Pujols. And now we hear they're in on Pujols with a qualifying offer, and they're very interested in Prince Fielder as well. Are the Cubs, in your mind, a serious candidate to land Pujols?
You know, that's a good question, because I'm fighting this back and forth. The Cubs always have the money. There's always the intrigue, the nostalgia. And if you're Albert Pujols going from such a traditional baseball town to another one, that would be great. But, I mean, talk about turncoat. It's like going from a Red Sox to a Yankee or something like that. So I would think that they're not necessarily a huge threat, just because I think Pujols' integrity and kind of just the kind of character he is, I don't think that he would probably go to them. But, hey, if they're putting all the right pieces in place, and Theo Epstein is absolutely one of those pieces, so he knows what he's doing, and he's the salesman above all. I mean, if you can sell yourself to be a GM of a baseball team at 28 years old, and you have the degrees that he has, and he's had the success that he has, you definitely could see them actually sneaking in there.
Let's assume for the moment that the Cubs do wind up signing Albert Pujols. What would the ramifications in the NL Central be?
I don't think that's enough for the Cubs to get over the hump and be contenders next year. There's still a lot of issues to answer on that in that organization. They're certainly going to be better just because of the staffs that they have in place now. But for Pujols, I think he wants to go to an absolute contender. I think the Marlins are more of that now. They have some pieces in place. They have some young talent on top of the guys that they just signed. So I think that if you're Pujols, you have to see a specific plan to say, I'm not wasting 3 years of my prime to go to a team just because they're throwing the most money at me.
And you look at the Marlins as presently constructed with Josh Johnson, Mike Stanton, Ricky Nolasco, Anibal Sanchez, and that's a pretty good starting rotation right there. Right. Those three guys, no doubt about it, they can bring it on the mound. And then you've got guys like Stanton, of course, now Reyes signed and Bell closing out games. All of a sudden, it looks like the Marlins might be a contender in the National League East, and if they land Pujols, that just changes the entire architecture of the National League.
Oh, absolutely. The Marlins had some, like you said, had some pieces in place, and they were decent for a good portion of the year last year. They just couldn't hold on in the end. I heard they're still going after another pitcher as well, so they're looking for another starting pitcher. So from that angle, they are bolstering their bullpen. They've addressed some of their lineup concerns. And then next, if they get Pujols, then they're going to go after another pitcher, a mid-level pitcher. There's a guy maybe like Roy Oswalt out there. So that could be a cheap but effective guy to have next year to kind of say, hey, look here, we want to put another name out here, a guy that still has a little juice left in his tank, and hopefully that they can do that and move forward.
And keep in mind how important home runs on offense and pitching are going to be to the Marlins in their new ballpark. It is not like Joe Robbie, Pro Player, Landshark, whatever you want to call
it,
stadium. This new ballpark is built for offense. There are home runs going to be hit aplenty. Maybe not on the level of new Yankee Stadium, say, but still, it's an offensively oriented park. Moving to the American League East from the National League East, Andrew Friedman, GM of the Tampa Bay Rays, under heavy consideration for the Houston Astros, hometown gig for him.
Right.
And he apparently has passed on it officially. He will stay with the Tampa Bay Rays. Obviously, moving up to Houston would have meant a bigger organizational budget, more that he could do, a little more flexibility. Do you think it was a mistake for him to take that offer and say, you know, I don't want it, I want to stick with the Rays, who have proven that they don't have the funds to really build a consistent year-in, year-out division champ?
Well, if you're a guy and you look how competitive these guys are that become top-level executives, and for Friedman, he's worked on this organization for years now, and I think he still feels like he has unfinished business, and that would be the only consideration. Now going back to the Astros, if he was to go to them, they're coming back into the American League. That's a whole different thing of contention and new ways to compete because the Rangers are there, so they're going to be pulling for the same kind of stuff. And I just think that organization's a bit of a mess right now, and he didn't want to have to clean that up after taking so long to build up the Rays.
I think that's one of the most fascinating subplots, actually, of the 2012 season, that the Astros are moving to the AL West. You know, you've got that divisional rivalry now with the Rangers, but more than that, this evens out the structure in baseball, and it's going to be very interesting to see how the Astros, a National League franchise, they're built for the National League, how they adapt in those first year or two to the American League.
I'm really interested to see how the fans are going to react from that. To be honest with you, I know there's a lot of uproar. I have some family down in Houston, and they were absolutely infuriated by the fact that they're moving to the AL, which I don't think that's a huge deal, but there's some competitive clubs out there, and the way that the AL West is built, there's the Angels who spend money, but the A's who don't. So you're going to have a chance to compete within your division.
Certainly going to be very interesting. The AL West has been wide open the last several years, and the Rangers only now really building a juggernaut in that AL West. Their farm system is absolutely stocked to the brim. Meanwhile, back in the National League East, the Washington Nationals reportedly are going to give Bryce Harper a chance to prove he can be their opening day right fielder. This is a kid going to be 19 years old, and we've seen him do tremendous things in the minor leagues, almost unprecedented things in the minor leagues, but is it still too soon? I mean, this is insane.
Well, a lot of people put a number, and you say, this guy's 19 years old, he's still a baby, what can he do? But you look at the successes of some guys that were brought up the right way. Andrew Jones, I know, is a little bit of a different story, as is
Alex
Miguel
Rodriguez.
Cabrera. Right. You have these guys coming from the Dominican, but a guy like Alex Rodriguez, for example, you're absolutely right that they have the pedigree. And look, you come out, you put him in the right field for the spring, he hits 300, keeps the strikeouts low, walks, and he shows the maturity that you need from him, then why not?
And certainly, you look at Bryce Harper, and he fits in a certain mold like Ken Griffey Jr. did when he came ballyhooed, number one draft pick. Everybody's eyes were on him from the second he took his first professional game, and the Mariners gave him a chance in his second season to play alongside his father, as it turned out, and it worked out pretty well for the Seattle Mariners for a long time.
Right, not bad at all.
And there's a guy, we can talk about, arguably one of the top five baseball players ever if he stays healthy.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. It's like you look at these kind of guys and you say, oh, they're so young, they're so raw. If you show the maturity that's necessary, then I don't see the problem. They didn't rush him along. He's just absolutely destroyed the minor leagues, and then you give him a chance in the spring, that's all I can say is why not?
I mean, he's definitely physically mature. The question is, right. Does he have the emotional maturity? We've seen him, spike the helmet a few times, get into some brawls, and it's a little chippy sometimes when you've got a big target painted on your back like he does. The other question, if he does start in right field, is Jason Worth capable of playing a capable center field?
As a guy that lives in the Philadelphia area watching Jason Worth... I'm not a Phillies fan, let me say that first, but Jason Worth was one of the most overrated players. I don't want him to be paid $127 million. The Nationals were just going for a splash with that. I don't think he can handle center field. He's probably a better fielder than a hitter.
Which did not say much in 2011, truth be told.
But, that's... They have to do something with him. There's no DH spot to plug him into, so he's got to play somewhere, and he's got to be in your starting lineup when you spend all that money.
It's going to be a very interesting year in Washington with Steven Strasburg contributing, in theory at least, about 160 innings. Jordan Zimmermann back to about full strength. That rotation is starting to take on some appearances of being a scary contender in that NL East, and certainly as Cliff Lee and Roy Halladay age, it's going to get even more daunting for opponents because Strasburg and guys like Zimmermann, Brad Peacock are going to be entering their primes.
No, absolutely. I mean, and you have guys like Strasburg, who's not even close to entering his prime. What is he, 22 years old? These guys are getting the big league experience necessary. There's some good pitchers in the bullpen as well. Tyler Clippard is fantastic.
Absolutely.
And
lights
they
out.
Have some of the pieces around. There's a couple of really good guys, and that's what happens when teams are down this long, that you start accumulating this young talent, and it just keeps getting better. And I think the Nationals have some promise. We saw it a little bit last year, how they were playing well until that whole debacle with Riggleman. But other than that, that's a team that I kind of follow just because there's some kind of intrigue for me with them. There's always something, there's always some kind of storyline around that organization that I find interesting.
The other big storyline surrounding the Nationals today is that they're contenders on C.J. Wilson, perhaps the premier pitcher available on the free agent market. And the Rangers, his former club, are going to make him their qualifying offer today. They're going to be in on him, of course. Other teams that have already offered are the Nationals, the Angels, the Mariners, and a secret team, yet unnamed, and that's always fun. Yeah, probably the Yankees. But that being said, the rumor around baseball is that the Nationals are the heavy favorites to sign him. They want to make a splash again in the free agent market. And if they can get him and, say, Prince Fielder, whom they've been rumored to love as well, we could see the tenor of the NL East change a whole lot in a very short time, with Miami going up and the Nationals going up.
Well, there's going to be excitement. I wouldn't say quite yet that the tenor's going to change, unless you're talking about the Marlins. That is, but the Nationals have so many holes to fill, but they will be an exciting team. As far as C.J. Wilson goes, I'm not a big believer in him. He's had two good years, and they've been very good years the last 2 years, but again, at 31 years old, I don't really want to give a guy 6-7 years at 31 years old who hasn't had the track record of success that you would like to have.
And bear in mind that most of his success and previous experience came in the bullpen.
Right.
So he's still adjusting to a starter's workload. We saw him a little bit fatigued, perhaps, in the postseason this year due to the starter workload. So it's going to be interesting to see how he adjusts both to the physical fatigue and the emotional fatigue of being an ace.
And in my mind, he's not an ace.
He's not a true ace. But
absolutely. I don't think he's an ace. I don't think he's a $100 million guy, but in today's market, there's really no other competition for him. I mean, who's out there?
Mark Burley? It's not the same player at all.
Right, but he's older. I mean, I'd rather pay a little bit extra for Mark Burley than have a whole lot of money locked down in C.J. Wilson.
And Burley, of course, a very hot commodity as well. A lot of teams in on him. One team that isn't, at least reportedly, is the Boston Red Sox, who would appear to need pitching, but Burley appears to not be on their wish list, nor is C.J. Wilson. They have said, we're staying out of the top free agent pitching tier, and they're going to have to figure it out a different way. There are some interesting names in the Rule 5 draft on Thursday. We'll discuss that tomorrow. However, today, let's talk about relief pitching. The Baltimore Orioles working on a trade with the Colorado Rockies for Houston Street. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Orioles need a lot more than a closer. Right. Am I right?
Right. Oh, absolutely. But hey, look, Buck Showalter is a good manager. The Orioles will be a team that will steal a game here and there. They stole a couple from the Yankees at the end of last season as well. It's Houston Street's one of these guys that, I don't know about you, but I think is a quality player. I mean, going from the A's to the Rockies, that was one thing I was confused about. I don't know why the A's would want to ship him out of town, but then you can give him away to the Orioles for who knows what right now. If the Orioles can pick him up cheap, then why not?
Well, don't forget who came over in... Oh, no, that's not that trade. That was the Dan Heron trade.
Right.
My bad.
Right.
No. Right there. No, but realistically, you know, the A's have a history of developing their own closers from within and then shipping them off. Right. Andrew Bailey, now the guy in Oakland, and he's doing just fine for them. They really resurrected him and built him out of nothing, and now he is one of the top closers in baseball. But even he is on the block these days. Everybody on the A's, it's a fire sale.
Somebody's always on the block for them. If you start getting good and they see those dollar signs coming up, they really need some help out there. That ballpark's horrendous.
Absolutely.
And there's really not anything that they can do anytime soon.
Across the Bay Area, however, the San Francisco Giants dealing with some injury issues. Buster Posey, of course, had his season ruined by a horrific play at the plate, and it's nobody's fault. He was doing the best he could. The runner was doing the best he could, but that did end the breakout star for the Giants' season. So, the question being, Buster Posey at first base? Because the Giants are indicating they're going to use him there at least a little. Following this injury, they want to make sure they get as much as they can out of him. Do you think this is a good move? I mean, a bat like Posey's at catcher is so valuable, but to move him to first base, you might lose a little bit of value there because first basemen tend to have that power already.
For Posey, I like that. Unless you're Yadier Molina, if a guy has a good bat and can play, you know, another position besides catcher, if you're a superstar, like the Joe Mauers of the world, the Jesus Montero, a Yankees farmhand that's coming up, get him out. Get him out from behind the plate. I want to see collisions at home plate. I don't want to see that. You know, I don't want to see anybody get hurt, but there still needs to be collisions at home plate. That still needs to be part of the game. But if a guy is a quality catcher, Posey's very good defensively, but Matt Wieters, for example, get them out from behind the plate.
Yeah.
Defensively, you can find somebody to replace them. You need that bat in the lineup, and you need a guy that you're paying all this money to and that has all this potential to be out on the field, not at home with a broken ankle.
It's funny, when Matt Wieters was drafted, we were all doing Matt Wieters facts. You know, we thought he was the second coming of Chuck Norris behind the dish, and he just has really fallen off. He played very well for what he is now, but boy, that really goes to show you expectations of kids coming out of the draft can often be way too high, and the Orioles did pin their hopes to him a little bit.
Well, going back to what you were saying, is Bryce Harper too young to come up? It's guys that come out of college, I think, that they rush more than anything because they're already 22, 23 years old, and
Wieters,
you're like, we got to get them right to the
big
leagues.
Yeah, and Wieters, of course, being a Georgia Tech product, right. You think of that program, you think of a lot of MLB-ready guys,
right.
And you think, oh, yeah, we can get them there, and then it doesn't happen.
I think those guys are rushed through more than any guy coming out of high school because they know what they have a few extra years to play with.
Now, you mentioned that you want to keep seeing collisions at home plate as part of the game. You think it's part of the fabric of the game. Should we be even talking about, you know, changing that rule? Because we have changed the rules before in the interest of safety.
Right.
Helmets,
right.
Things of this nature. Maple bats, for example. You wouldn't think 100 years ago we'd ever have to change, you know, what wood you can use in your bat, but there it is. So should we be talking about getting rid of the collision at home plate, which is without question the most violent and unprotected play in all of baseball?
The competitor in me says that this is a necessary part of the game for the simple fact of, why are you going to sit there and give yourself up at home plate on a run that could cost you a game, a championship, a World Series? I can understand the argument on either side. However, I think that it absolutely is necessary and that you shouldn't take that part out of the game at all. What are your feelings on that?
I'm conflicted. I'm not going to lie, because there are bright stars like Posey and Carlos Santana, who had his season ended on a similar play the year before.
Right.
And these are guys who should be excelling in the majors for years. But by the freak coincidence that they happen to play catcher, this can ruin their entire career. They can get all that derailed in an instant. We've seen players like Yogi Berra undergo injuries. Johnny Bench, as tough a player as ever there was, he had brutal injuries on plays at the plate. So there's a part of me that wants to see the rule at least amended.
I mean, but there's really no way to make it competitively fair. Yeah, and that's the main issue that I have, I think, more than anything
else. Changing the fabric of how the game is
played. It's like when you're playing Little League, you have to give yourself up or you have to slide into home plate. I mean, why is a guy going to slide when he needs that run, when you need that championship?
Right, and it is one of the most exciting plays in baseball. You know, when you play video games, you're always going for that collision at home plate, even if it's just an outlandishly bad thing. But, you know, now you play those video games and you think of those injuries and you're like, I'll slide it instead. Maybe just that. All right, another trade going on today. We discussed about how Houston Street already, a rumor, Kevin Slowey's already on the move. He's heading to the Colorado Rockies. And certainly that's always a pitching-starved team, particularly now that they've traded Ubaldo Jimenez.
Right.
And they need a little more in the rotation. Slowey never really got a chance with the Twins last year. They kind of bounced him around a little bit, didn't give him much to work with. That being said, you know, this is a guy who controls his walks. And in a park like Coors, where you can't afford to have runners on base, that's a valuable trait.
Absolutely. I mean, the Colorado Rockies are an organization that I also like. There's a lot of good things said around here about them. And you kind of feel bad for them because they are handicapped by their environment at times. And you have to take chances on guys like Kevin Slowey, because if you see that you bring a guy in like Mike Hampton that blows up, or Denny Nagel, for example, you got to take chances on these lower prices, and hopefully they work out and see guys that are really tailored to your ballpark. That's where these, you know, all the walk rate, strikeout to walk ratios really come in handy. That's where the breaking down of the numbers excessively really becomes important.
And certainly we've seen pitchers succeed in Colorado before. Usually they are very high strikeout pitchers. Slowey about 6-7 K9. He's a fly ball pitcher too, which is not going to help him in Colorado. That being said, we were discussing that, you know, walks kill you more than anything else. There's a lot of room in that outfield, and that outfield can fly. Carlos Gonzalez, they can absolutely move.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they're defensively a very good team, and you know, if you put the ball in play, but I can see your concern with the fly balls.
Meanwhile, another rumor in the NL West, the San Francisco Giants trying to move Jeff Kepinger, Andres Torres, Ramon Ramirez. You know, they fielded one of the worst offensive lineups in ages last year after Posey went down. Even before Posey went down, it was kind of meager, and then it just got apocalyptically bad.
There's absolutely a team that needs some kind of help offensively. Well, I mean, a guy like Aaron Rowan, I consider just to be another guy that's a waste of money that had a couple good years, and you just throw some cash at him because he produced right before his free agency. But overall, the Giants are going to need help. You can't just cut them around and pick up guys like Cody Ross every now and then and hopefully that they come through and become big parts of your lineup.
Michael Viso with some sterling analysis throughout this podcast. Thank you very much, Michael, for being with us.
Me.
We now welcome on Larry Hall. Larry, another aspiring broadcaster here at the Winter Meetings of Baseball. We're at the job fair on floor 3 podcasting. It's not going to be live, sadly. I couldn't get the internet activated here, but we're always having fun up here. Larry Hall, fresh off yet another job interview. Man is a machine. Larry, thank you
for
being with
us. That's what they call me, just like Albert Pujols.
I want to get your thoughts on the Marlins potentially making him this huge 200-plus mil 10-year offer. Do you think that's enough to get a deal done with Pujols?
I don't know. I got to be honest. If I was given a contract like that, I may be very inclined to sign. I know there's been talk about, you know, maybe a shorter contract with the market coming up in the next few years, but man, what was the dollar figure in that?
It's not confirmed yet. You know, right now all we've got is rumors and hearsay about, oh, it's 10 years and 200 plus, but eventually we are going to find out, and certainly they're positioning themselves as serious contenders for Pujols' services alongside the Cardinals and the Cubs. Last thing I really want to talk about today, Jimmy Rollins' agent is meeting with the Milwaukee Brewers, and there's a team that could desperately use an upgrade at the shortstop position. Yunieski Betancourt, he came through with a big hit in the postseason, but man, he was one of the worst players in the major leagues over the past few years. And the Brewers, who have been so strong at so many positions, it would be nice for them to be able to get a competent bat, a competent fielder in the lineup there.
Oh, for sure. And you know, it's Jimmy Rollins, man. Rolling along with Rollins, that's what I like to say. I don't know why I like to say it. It's not even all that good.
I'll laugh at it. You know, yeah, I'm easy like Sunday morning.
I really appreciate the laugh, the patronization of myself. But, you know, I've always liked Jimmy Rollins. I know he's kind of slumped out the last couple of years, and I think he's had an injury or two. I'm not really altogether sure. But, you know, it'd be great for the Brewers, and it'd be nice to see them continue. Because as a franchise, you know, they haven't experienced that much success, and now you're starting to see it late. Of course, if I don't know what they're thinking of doing with Fielder, if Fielder's going to end up staying there or not, but that team can make a nice little run if Rollins is roaming the shortstop position or third or wherever he's going to play.
He'll play shortstop. They've got, you know, they've got Casey McGee at third base. They got Ryan Braun in left field. That's still a very strong team.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
They can put Matt Gamel in, bring him up from the minors to play first base. He's got a stick, no doubt about it. But it remains to be seen how much is it going to hurt them if and when they lose Prince Fielder. Now, you're from the Southern California,
oh, yeah,
is that right?
It. Yep, you know it. So
that makes you a Dodgers man, well, I would have to say.
Oh, boy. Are we going to talk about the Dodgers here? Let's go into it.
Well, the Dodgers are an interesting situation right now, no doubt about it, because of the sale of the team eventually, probably. It's almost certainly going to be forced. Magic Johnson putting together a group.
I got to be honest. If Magic Johnson has anything to do with the Dodgers, it's LA's going to love it. I mean, he's our guy. He is our guy. And, you know, when you're a Lakers legend, it doesn't matter what you do. I was going to say something I probably shouldn't. But
well, yeah, let's keep it on baseball here. But absolutely, he is as big a profile as there is in LA in the sports world.
Yeah.
It's him and Scully. And that's
Vince
it.
Scully, yeah. Now, Vince Scully can grab a bat and go play if he wants. You
know, oh, my God.
He meets it could use it because
The offense is kind of meager right now.
Yeah, it's
on the,
meager.
They've got Kemp and they've got Ethier, but Casey Blake, well.
Casey Blake, I was so excited when he came over. I was, and I thought he was going to do great things over there at first base. And he's a solid player, but he's not quite the offensive threat that I thought he would be, I suppose.
Yeah. But there are building blocks in L.A.,
sure.
No doubt about it. They may lose Hiroki Kuroda, which would definitely hurt in the rotation, but when you've got Clayton Kershaw hurling for you, you're
hey,
in good
you know
shape.
What?
And there's a kid who can bend a curveball.
Yeah, Clayton Kershaw went to high school with my cousins down here in Dallas.
No kidding.
Park. He's a great guy. He said that when he gets this huge contract, whenever that's going to be, he's going to give, he said he's going to give about half of it away to charity. He's a Tim Tebow guy, but he's likable, unlike Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
<You know?
laughs> I see what you're going with there. No doubt.
Love Clayton Kershaw. He's got so much, well, potential. You already see he's one of Cy Young potential, whatever.
Yeah, but potential multi-Cy Young winner.
Yes, and it's going to be great to see him and Tim Lincecum go at it for a few years.
And
it's so much fun. You
don't just have that. Obviously, the Giants also having Kane and Bumgarner. That's some serious pitching depth. On Arizona, they've got some incredible young pitchers. Daniel Hudson, I'm a very big fan of. Ian Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
They're both really bringing the new element to that team.
He came over from the Yankees.
That's right,
he
did.
Okay.
He came over in a deal, and that was the Edwin Jackson No, that wasn't the Edwin Jackson deal. Edwin Jackson was for Daniel Hudson. But that was the deal that brought Curtis Granderson to the Yankees.
The Grandy Man.
And
man, do they love him in New York or what?
Oh, my gosh. A guy who hits like that? Absolutely. And I'm glad he didn't win the MVP this year. You know, I didn't think he was a top three candidate in my book.
Yeah,
I thought Verlander and Ellsbury were interchangeable at the top, and then there's a whole host of guys you go to before you go to Curtis Granderson. There's so much talent around him on that team.
Well, the amazing thing is he's not – I would consider maybe a glorified role player. I don't want to call him a role player because he's the Grandy Man.
Right.
But when you got guys around him, like Robinson Cano, for instance, and A-Rod,
even though he had a bit of a down year.
But Jeets is on his way down. Unfortunately, he's one of the better guys in the MLB, just character-wise too. But he fits in that program or that organization perfectly. So,
Larry, this is not your first rodeo, as they say here in Texas, at the winter meetings. You have been through this before. How has your experience this time differed from in previous years?
Well, first of all, it's interesting that you bring up the word rodeo because I do want to try it.
Yeah, why not? There has to be a bar around here that has one of those, you know.
There's gotta be
bull riding things.
Get up there, but yeah, I mean, this is I would say pretty similar to last year. It's just a great experience because not just posting, going for the jobs, but just meeting people. I mean, I was talking to the Lancaster Jethawks last night, and they haven't posted any jobs or anything like that. But it's just great to see people and just stop. And you can just stop and talk to whoever you want. You don't have to be nervous, but you just go up there like, oh, I just saw your name tag there, and yeah. I want to say hi.
Who's your favorite celebrity sighting so far?
Bobby Valentine.
Bobby V.
By far. And the reason for that is because of the one moment where he got ejected from a baseball game, comes back in, puts the fake mustache on his face, goes, I'm like, I love that. I love
that was Bobby Valentino. That's who that was, who appeared back in the dugout, I'm saying.
Yes,
with the mustache.
Okay. Put the little O at the end of the name.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I love guys that go, you know, they have fun with their jobs, because how many people get to do those kinds of jobs?
It's such a privilege to deal with the guys who clearly enjoy it. You know, I had the good pleasure to interview Terry Francona as part of a media scrum at an Orioles-Red Sox game once upon a time. And there was a guy who was just joking around. He was enjoying himself. He clearly loved what he did. And to see a guy who isn't all grumbles and... It's refreshing, no doubt about it, because you can get jaded in this game occasionally.
It's interesting. I think you look at the NFL and you look at baseball, it's almost a completely different dynamic as far as head coaches is concerned, because in baseball you got a lot more guys who, I think you're right with Terry Francona, Bobby Valentin, and, you know, Tommy Lasorda back in the day.
Yeah.
And in the NFL you got, you know, Bill Belichick, you got, you know, the guy up in I can't remember the guy's name, the San Francisco 49ers head coach now, it's slipping my mind.
Oh, that's Harbaugh.
Harbaugh, yeah. But
Jim,
like,
Harbaugh.
Yeah, they're just, I guess in football it gets to be a little more.
Yeah.
Because it's more aggressive. But anyways, yeah, that's what I love about Bobby Valentine.
And it's funny, you know, we skipped over Joe Maddon, who may be the most gregarious manager in Major League Baseball, and who has a terrific sense of humor. If you're listening from the winter meetings, do try and track down Joe Maddon, because there's a guy who is just the life of the party everywhere he goes. And we've got so much more to talk about in the next couple days. We'll be back, if not later today, we will be back tomorrow with another podcast. I'd like to thank Michael Viso and Larry Hall for being on with me. I'm Ben Gelman-Chomsky. You're listening to this on my website, so you probably already know that. But I appreciate everybody tuning in. We'll be back with more with the Winter Meetings podcast here from Dallas, Texas. Thanks for tuning in.